you're a California conservative, a libertarian, a moderate Democrat, believe in common sense, or just a sane person, this is the political podcast for you. It's the California Underground Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the California Underground Podcast. I am your host, Phil, as always, with my trusty co-host, the best and fastest researcher in the West. And tonight, we are very privileged to have the Assemblywoman Diane Dixon joining us tonight from Sacramento to tell us all about what she's doing up there. She's been hard at work. We're going to be talking about several of the bills that she's authored. That's right. Republicans can author bills in Sacramento. It's a crazy notion. It does happen. And we're going to talk about what her goals are, as well as the Republican Party as well. So, Assemblywoman, thank you for coming on to the show. How are you doing tonight?
I'm great. And thank you both for even providing this vehicle to communicate what's going on in Sacramento. It's my favorite subject. So thank you for inviting me. I'm delighted.
Yeah, we found that recently we've been very lucky. Past couple of weeks, we've had a lot of assembly members on. And it seems that you guys really like to kind of sit down and chat about this because it doesn't seem like you really get anywhere else to go to kind of have an outlet. It seems like all the media doesn't really give you guys a fair shake, or, I mean, even if you get a news spot, it's what, like 2 minutes to even put out your ideas. So, we found that people really enjoy this kind of long form format right now. So
I think it's great. You're right. I mean, this is our public forum. the public circle here that we can talk and inform your listeners of the important activities and issues that are going on in Sacramento.
So before we begin, for the people who don't know who you are, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, how you got started in politics, and how you got to where you are now?
Okay. Where do I begin? I have been in business. I'm a business person. I would describe myself as a business executive. I had been for about over 30 years, worked for a Fortune 300 company and global company. So I've traveled the world and did government relations, financial communications, marketing communications across 84 countries in the world. And I had a wonderful career. I loved every minute of it. And then I realized I had a great team and I needed to let them fly in their wings. And so I've been in the position for 30 years and in Pasadena in Los Angeles County. And so my husband, we're still married to each other after almost 45 years. He is a career prosecutor. He'd been with Los Angeles County District Attorney, head of major crime, the worst of the worst crimes in Los Angeles County. And then when we moved to Orange County, he started working for Todd Spitzer, who's now DA, District Attorney Todd Spitzer, when Todd was running for district attorney. And since I was, at that point, I had run for city council in Newport Beach, was elected, served as mayor in my first term, was reelected, and served as mayor again. So that was 2014 to 2018. So my husband decided since I was doing that, he would go to work for the Orange County DA because he was not done yet. I wasn't done yet. And wanted to continue to give back. We are parents of a prosecutor, although she's kind of retired now. Our daughter lives in New York. It was a Manhattan district attorney, Manhattan district attorney. Now she's a mother to our three grandsons, but public safety issues have been dinner table conversation for us for forever. So when I concluded we termed out in city council after 8 years, the assembly district we needed to get a Republican into the assembly. And so I ran in 2020 against Cadi Petri Norris, who had won in 2018. We needed to get it back. We had lost it after many, many years. And I lost by about 1,000 votes. And but I wasn't done. I said, well, I'm going to do this again. Who's going to run? Okay, I'll run. No one else wanted to go to Sacramento. That was true in 2020. And again in 2022, that we had redistricting. And it really made my district much more favorable, plus 5 or 6 point Republican advantage. And so it was an open seat because Connie by then had moved to Irvine. So she represents Irvine. So I thought, who's going to run? Who's going to run and represent local government, fiscal responsibility, common sense, business, especially small business? Who's going to go to Sacramento? You know, dead silence. Nobody wanted to do it. And our daughter, I mean, we just have one child. She's in New York, as I said. And my husband's working, busy serving the public and keeping our community safe, head of major crime in Orange County. And I said, okay, I'll go to Sacramento. No one wants to go. I will go. And I'm so glad I did. So that's what I will talk about and why I am here and what I intend to do and why I have not given up on Sacramento, because we need to make change.
Well, thank you so much for stepping up, running and winning and representing part of Orange County.
Well, you guys, at first I thought you were Camille's assembly representative because you guys are sort of close in Orange County, but not that close.
It's like right outside mine.
So Philip Chin is a great assembly person, one of my favorite people. So you have a great representative.
Yes.
So most people, you know, we just came back this week from a 4 week recess, so to speak. And most people, you could ask me the question that everybody says, well, Diane, how is Sacramento? How bad is it? And my answer is, whatever you think about Sacramento and how bad it is, it's worse than what you think.
Wow.
Okay. I was afraid you were going to say that. Okay.
Yeah, I thought maybe you were going to say, oh, it's better than what people make it out to be.
No, and there are no surprises. My eyes are wide open. And that's why I'm here. Because if I have a voice, we have the public square. I'm speaking in the public square, thanks to both of you. And that's what we can do. I mean, I talked to legislators who've been here for a few years, and they came when there was pretty much equal match, Republican, Democrat. And so it's gotten significantly, obviously, that we have a supermajority advantage. The Democrats have a supermajority. And I could talk to Democrats, and they will say, yes, there are too many Democrats. There's no debate. There's no negotiation. They could ignore Republicans. They don't need Republicans. Well, that's just music to my ears, because I intend to fight. And that's a longer term, but hope not too long. In 2024, 2026, I am working very hard to elect more Republicans. The supermajority, many people think it's like 20 more seats that the Democrats have. It's only 9. We need to elect 9 more Republicans, flipping 9 seats that used to be red, all up and down, primarily Central Valley and a few other seats around Orange County and San Diego. It can be done. And this is all I talk about. And I have to wake up Republicans on several levels. People need to vote. In each of these 9 districts, and offline I could share them with you, but each of these 9 districts, the Republican candidate for governor and the Republican candidate for controller, Lonnie Chan and Ryan Dolley, won in these 9 districts by 1 or 2 points. The Republican assembly candidates, this is last November, the Republican assembly candidates lost by 1 to 5 percentage points. These are districts Republicans should be winning, and we can't give up on them. It's not impossible, and it is a cause worth fighting for. My message is, we can't just keep winning one seat at a time. Well, I'll be gone. There's not enough time. We have to get these seats replaced with the right candidate in 24 and in 26. And so the caucus, which is the Republican caucus and the party, are heavily recruiting and identifying and recruiting potential candidates who can win. I'm very pleased with our caucus. Very smart people. No one's a crazed ideologue. They want to make good quality public policy. And that's what we are all committed to. And they're all committed to being successful. So I am really focused on my own reelection, of course, but my district, I don't know if I have an opponent yet, and I'm sure I will, but my district does have a Republican advantage, but I have to appeal to independents too. It's 30-30-30, and you can't win just with Republican base alone. So my message to Republicans, especially the grassroots as well as activist people, is people have to vote, because you know what? These Republican candidates last November lost by about 1,000 votes. This is the difference. Mm-hmm. It's not these wide margins and these purplish districts. It's just by 1,000 votes. When I lost to Cadi Petri Norris in 2020, I lost by 1,000 votes. So the losses are not huge in these swing districts. So this is my soapbox. This is what I talk about. It's not about me. It's about all of us getting back to common sense policy that will protect California. Frankly, I am tired of people telling me they're moving to Tennessee. You probably know them. I hear about it every day. When I fundraise, people say, oh, Diane, so great to talk to you. But you know what? I'm in Florida now. I'm in Texas. I will not give up on California. And we have to get back to common sense, because we all know we're falling off a cliff and we've got to bring it back. But the only way we can bring it back is Republicans and independents have to be highly motivated to vote. And when people, there's another soapbox issue, when people say, oh, I don't trust it. I trust it. I trust the Orange County Registrar voter systems. I truly do. And we have to give people the confidence that their every single vote counts. It's less than 1,000. Sometimes Greg Wallace, who won in a curing process, he lost on Election Day in Palm Springs out there. And the Republicans last Thanksgiving weekend came down to cure ballots, because ballots get thrown out if the signature is not legible. And you get these ballots and you get an affidavit and you go to the person's home and you knock on the door and say, they threw out your ballot because they couldn't read your signature. Would you attest to this, that this is your ballot? And they sign it. He won by 600 votes because of curing a ballot. This is what the Democrats do. This is Republicans, just like ballot harvesting, which is legal. Republicans have to be smarter, better, faster at this, and we can win, but we have to be well organized. So that's what I'm doing. And it takes a lot of money. That's what I'm raising a lot of money as well.
Yeah. So I guess this is a bad time to mention that I'm closing escrow on a house in Arizona, right?
Do not.
I'm just
tell
kidding.
Me.
I'm not going anywhere. Camille knows I'm not going anywhere.
I'm not going anywhere either.
No, I love San Diego. I don't want to go anywhere. There's so much you said that's like so refreshing. It's stuff that I've said plenty of times before on this show. And I'm really glad you're on here. And we've been lucky to have so many assembly members on to really kind of focus people back on the fact that if you want to fix California, it's the state legislature. It's no offense to people who run for Congress, people who say, oh, I'm going to fix California by running for Congress. Right. That always drives me nuts. It's not, you know, whoever's in president or White House. It's the legislature. If you're tired of taxes and all this stuff,
yes.
You have to focus on the state legislature. So
let me tell you what
supermajority,
I say.
Sorry, I just want to finish this up.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I've said the same thing. The supermajority is not that far off to being destroyed. And that can change so many things in how Sacramento is governed. And it slows down some of these crazy bills that the rest of the country looks at and goes, is California like, have they all gone just insane? Yeah. And so, yeah, it's really great to have someone who's in Sacramento elected saying the same exact thing. So that's really great to hear.
Let me tell you my talking point on that. And I talked to a lot of business people who are major donors to congressional candidates. And I didn't used to talk like this just since I've been up here for 8 months that I really gelled in my head. And I say to them, what if you ignore Sacramento at your own peril? If you're in business or you have any profession or you have a family in schools or you as a parent, you ignore Sacramento at your own peril, because let me assure you, everything you don't like about Sacramento is going to Congress. It's going to Washington, D.C. I have heard, well, maybe you could even look this up, an assembly person, a Democrat assembly person in California, was interviewed in the New York Times. Not many people, I do read multiple newspapers the old-fashioned way as well as digitally. But anyway, the New York Times did about a month or two ago, did a California on their Sunday magazine, did a profile on California, kind of the good, bad, and the ugly, mainly praising California. We all know that there are problems, but they didn't. But that's the New York Times. But anyway, so they interviewed one of the assembly people, and who's responsible for a lot of the housing legislation and all this that has been changing. That's another reason why Iran are taking all these, imposing all these state mandates on local government. But anyway, they asked her, well, why don't you go to Congress where you could do so much more? And you know what her answer was? In the New York Times. Why go to Congress? I could change the world from Sacramento. And that is true. They are so, because everybody looks to California. Progressive Democrats, incidentally, there are three political parties in California, Democrat, Republican, and Progressives. The Progressive Democrats are not satisfied with zero emissions and being number one in the United States. They want to be number one in the world in zero emissions. So their horizon is not the United States, it's the world. And they are empowered through self-empowerment because they have a supermajority. And no one resists them. I heard a story today from a Democrat who has been here for a number of years and terming out. And he was here when Willie Brown, in the last 2 years, I guess, of Willie Brown's speakership. And at that time, the Republican-Democrat count was like 39 to 41 or something like that. And it was pretty balanced. And Willie Brown is the speaker, and the assembly minority leader, Republican leader, work together every single day. And Willie said, now you got to get these Republicans. How many Republicans do you have on this so we can get this up? How many Republicans do you have that we can pass this? How many Republicans? Yeah. Every day they strategized to pass legislation that both parties could agree on. Of course, we don't have any of that now. And that California is suffering because of that, as we all know, because there's no resistance. They are empowered by no resistance. So what we can do is talk and get through social media, which we've never had that kind of voice before. People like you are so critical to your listeners listening to be involved in stopping this power that the supermajority has. And that means by getting behind Republican candidates who can win. There's another problem Republicans have. They run against each other in the primary. That's what happened to me. My 2020 race spent $350,000 of donor money to defeat my other Republican candidate. And I was $350,000 short in the general election. And Connie Petrie Norris had $4 million to my $1 million. And I could have, if that extra $300,000, I could have done whatever and maybe been successful to get that extra 1,000 votes. We have to be smarter. And Republicans are really locked into, well, let the people decide in the primary. Well, we have to be smart. Do we want to win? And I found out, too, there are many Republicans, sadly, who really don't care about winning. They just want to speak loudly about their own positions on things. And it's just not effective. And I feel very strongly that we have to unite and realize that we have, fortunately, social issues may not be the number one issue going into 24. That's where Republicans step all over themselves. Homelessness is the number one issue. The economy is the number two issue. Public safety is number three. If Republicans just all align on those issues, I think we can really get a powerful message across.
Yeah, and my bigger point about why it's so crucial to focus on the state legislature and these races is, a lot of people want to abandon California. A lot of people, the pundits, want to give up on California. But my thing is, and this is sort of a dire way to put it, I say if you give up on California, just give up on the rest of the country.
Because I say that if too.
If you are not going to stop it here in California, it's going to spread to Arizona. Yes. It's going to spread to Nevada. It'll get to Texas. It'll get to Florida. So this is the front lines right now.
Yes.
And if you can stop it and turn the tide back, that does wonders for the rest of the country to show you can push back on this progressive policy or these progressive agendas, and you can win and you can actually change the tide here. And I think that's really crucial that people start to believe we can turn it around in these local races and in these assembly and Senate races.
Well, you're look at Arizona. So many people fled to Arizona and then they elected a Democrat governor last year. You know, so what did fleeing to Arizona do? And I just wanted to say real quick to your point on, you know, Republicans need to get out and vote and quit talking about, well, you didn't say this exactly, but quit talking about stolen elections, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. I heard it, someone said, and I thought this was so great. You know, there's about 10 million registered Democrat voters in California, and I think 5 million Republican. I believe that's about the number. And when you put it that way, it does sound very like, oh, there's no point. We're never going to win. They're going to crush us. But someone made the point that we don't have to go and register 5 million Republicans. We just each have to register one. Each Republican just needs to get one person registered Republican and, of course, get them to vote. And if every Republican registered in California did that, we could win.
Well, that's a very good point. As I said earlier about independence, we can't win without independence. I can't tell you how many I primarily knock on independent doors because you get that information from the Registrar of Voters. And they're usually all former Republicans. They just got mad during the Trump years and whatever. And they go, oh, Diane, you're just the kind of Republican I want. You're common sense. And so the independents who used to be Republicans can vote Republican with the right candidates. And that's what Republicans have to appeal to. But you're absolutely right not to give up on California. We have to tell, too many people think they're going to escape it, but it's just going to follow them to Arizona, Texas, Georgia. I just read some news clip today. Georgia used to be solidly Republican. And now for a lot of different reasons, it's not. I mean, the governor is, but the two U.S. senators are not. And now it's a toss-up state when it used to be solidly Republican. We have to be smarter. A comment, I say this a lot, when I knock on doors and you know who is a registered voter and how many elections they have voted in the last five elections. And many people say, I'll say, why didn't you vote in the last election? Well, I didn't think I had to. It's always been Republican in Orange County. It's changed. I said, your county has changed. We must all vote. And you, and to your point, take people with you to the polls. And don't wait until election day. Vote when the polls are open and when you get your mail-in ballot. Get that in there. Because what the Democrats do is they see that the Republicans are kind of dragging and not going because they want to go to the polls and turn in their ballot. So the Democrats promote the fact that the Republicans are slow. They're slow. They're not voting. And the Republicans say, well, maybe I don't need to vote. And you do need to vote. So I urge everybody to vote early. I was born in Chicago. Vote early, vote often.
Yeah. I've always been a proponent of that, too. I get people pushing back. Like, I'm a fan, personally. I know a lot of listeners or followers have pushed back on this. I like when I get the ballot and I make a little night out of it because California has so many things to vote on anyway. You know, yes. I'll pour myself a nice bourbon. I'll sit down. I'll read everything. I'll go through it meticulously. It takes me like an hour. And I take my time and I vote and I fill it out, you know, in pencil. And then I go and I drop it off at a polling location, which to me seems pretty secure because you're literally handing it and putting it in that safe box that then has to go to the registrar, as opposed to any electronic machine or anything like that. So don't be afraid of early voting and don't be afraid of dropping it off at polling locations. And Republicans, just vote. There should be no excuse. Just get out there and vote. Don't wait till the last minute. The one time I voted electronically, it was in the recall election. It got all screwed up. It was the candidate I voted for wasn't there. The machine, people were touching it. They weren't supposed to, but anyway, point of the story is, if you can get the paper ballot, vote early, drop it off. It's fine.
Yeah.
Well, then I have a question.
Go ahead.
Well, what would you say to people? Because there's going to be pushback for your comment. What would you say to people who are going to say, no, we should only vote one day, mail-in ballots aren't secure, et cetera, et cetera? What would you say to
them? I will say mail-in ballots. You drop them in the county boxes that are situated all over the county. They are secure. I'll tell you why. Because you you get a barcode, and when you submit it in, and you register that online, and then when you submit your ballot, that barcode, you get an email that says the county reserve, the registrar of voters received your ballot. It's the best protection I've ever had in my voting history to get that confirmation. So it is going through the machines, and be smart about it. I tell people, make your signature legible. And now if you've changed your name since you registered, maybe you should go to the polling place when the polls open and explain, now I'm Susie Smith instead of Susie Taylor. But because that, if your name is different than what's on the rolls, then it gets thrown out. So people need to be smart about it. One other thing to put your point, when I knock on doors on the final, on election day, the traditional election day, and I see from the registrar, we can tell who they released the information. It's really very smart. So candidates don't have to keep sending out mailers to people who've already voted. So you match that up. Anyway, I'll knock on doors to people who have not voted. Their ballot has not been turned in, because everybody knows that now electronically. And I can't tell you how many people say, I got my ballot 3 weeks ago. I don't remember where it was. My husband took it. My caregiver took it. I said, well, maybe it's somewhere. Why don't you look for it? Well, I don't have time. So it's too, I wish we didn't have the 4 weeks, but it is what it is. Please vote on the day you get your ballot and hand carry it either to that voting box or to when the polling center opens, is 2 weeks before the election day. It's absolutely critical. No excuses. Republicans must vote. Every vote counts.
I can already tell I really love your passion about all of this. So it's really refreshing to know that there are people like you up in Sacramento.
I realize we could just sit back and just let her talk.
Yeah.
We'll just sign off. You can hit the stop button when we're done. So I'm gonna turn the lights out when you're done.
You know, I'm a lifelong Republican. Ronald Reagan, Pete Wilson, George Eugmajian, this what I know. And I know we had good policies, and they were bipartisan, bicameral policies. And when you have, it's not even democracy. When you have one party making all the decisions, no debate, no negotiation, no consensus, no coalitions, it's one party. It's wrong. It's not democratic. It's not democracy. And even the Democrats will say that they're just too many. The Democrats have their issues. Republicans have to be smart and start talking about this. And so let me just shift gears and talk about some bills. Like, you know about SB 14, and for your listeners, Shannon Grove's bill on child trafficking, which made it through unanimously through the Senate. It comes to the infamous Assembly Public Safety Committee and gets defeated on a party line vote by 6-2. And we raised holy hell, the Republicans did, and said, how can the Democrats protect child traffickers? So these are issues that, I mean, our people of both parties have to say, well, nobody supports child traffickers. Well, the Assembly Public Safety Committee majority didn't want enhancements to call it a strong felony, that Prop 47 reduced that classification of felony. And so we just hit the social media and the news media and got the victims of child traffickers to a press conference. I mean, they're just terrible stories these people, these women have been through. And fortunately, we just had gone through, the Democrats elected a new speaker, and the speaker didn't want all this drama and criticism, and even Newsom got in the act. And so the speaker said to the chair of public safety, you will have another meeting of that public safety committee, of your special meeting of your committee, and you are going to pass out this bill. And that's what happened. And we were all sitting there while it happened. And the chair comes in. We were waiting for the quorum. So he comes in after we adjourned from the assembly session, and there was a special meeting of public safety. He banged his gavel. I thought the windows would shatter all through the Capitol. He was so mad that the new speaker, which Anthony Rendon was the former speaker. Apparently, he didn't exert that kind of control on the committee chairs. And Rivas told the committee chair, Reggie Jones-Sawyer, thou shalt have a hearing and get this bill out of public safety. And he banged it. And it was a 30-second meeting because two people changed their vote, the Republican votes, or three people did. And so it was 6-2 again on passing it out. Now that bill will go to appropriations, where it will be tomorrow. I'm on appropriations. So Shannon Grove will be speaking on her bill at appropriations. And then if assuming it hopefully passes out of appropriations, and then it goes to the floor of the assembly and then before September 15th when we adjourn. So this would be a real telltale sign if Republicans can keep mobilizing people to fight for common sense and for our strong public safety laws, and this gets through, mark my words, this would be huge. This is an earthquake if this bill gets passed before September 15th when we adjourn. And then it tells all of us there are other bills that must pass, public safety especially related bills that must pass to protect our communities. I can tell you, I'll spend a minute tell you another real bad bill that we have to not, that has to be defeated. The bad bill that I'm talking about, or we'll talk about, has to be defeated. A lot of bad bills have to be defeated. A lot of good bills have to pass. But if this SB 14 gets through, it's a new day where we can mobilize public opinion through social media, news conferences, and the grassroots activist groups are alive and thriving. On the issue related to parental control, we had a news conference here today, yesterday, I guess it was. Ah, signs everywhere, people carrying signs, protect parents, protect parents. We need to control, protect our children. So this kind of movement that they're seeing, they will be getting hurt. Fentanyl, the people that come up here on fentanyl, who can support fentanyl dealers? I have a constitutional amendment proposed, ACA 12, that would enhance the sentence to prison, someone who dispenses fentanyl. And they've been warned that if someone dies, you go to prison. Well, that didn't get through. A Democrat Senator Umberg had that same bill, Senate Bill 44, didn't get through the Senate because it couldn't get through their Public Safety Committee. So I'm taking it to the voters. That's what I said. I had a news conference on this. But let the voters decide what the penalty should be for someone who's a dealer who sells fentanyl and young people especially, die. It's a grain of salt, that fentanyl that's injected into those pills. And people are dying. 7,000 people, 7,000 Californians died last year because of fentanyl. So this momentum is starting. And I am willing, and let me just talk a minute about ACA 12. There's a support group, the Fentanyl Coalition. They are organized and prepared to raise the necessary money to $16 million, $6 million to get the signatures for the initiative. If my bill doesn't get through the legislature, and another $10 million for the ballot. Activity to get it to win for the election, the campaign in November of 2024. So people are beginning to feel empowered and realizing they can make a difference through the public square. So that's really exciting.
The one thing, sorry, Ken, I just want to make this point. And this may be to your point about there's no debate and there's no pushback in Sacramento in terms of the numbers. So you have the Republicans and they're a small minority and you have the Democrats. But I think there's an X factor that works in Sacramento, which is the people. And I think the uproar over SB 14 was the pushback externally that yes. forced a lot of Democrats who may have been all like on the fence to go, whoa, wait a second. Okay, maybe we need to refocus. And I think that's such an important thing that listeners need to hear is that, yeah, when you call in, when you bombard those offices and you hit them with emails and contact forms and phone calls, you're the X factor that pushes back on the legislature that makes them back off this stuff or support stuff that needs to get passed. And I think that's a way of helping Republicans kind of be like the cavalry's coming in.
That's the only leverage we really have because the vote doesn't count. We have to influence it from the outside. And they're on the news. These were... The SB 14 child trafficking was on the news, not just Fox News, but it was on local news all over Sacramento. And Newsom didn't like the negative. I mean, he's running for president. He didn't like that negative publicity. And the Democrats didn't either. There's another bill I'll tell you about. It's SB 94. It's passed the Senate. It's now over in the Assembly. And what it will do, it's the worst of the worst prisoners. Will get early released without too much getting into the weeds. If a murder, the worst of the worst crimes, they were sentenced to life without possibility of parole. They weren't sentenced to the death because the defense attorney said, why do death? Do LWOP, life without possibility of parole. These people will, this person will never get out of prison. The victims will never have to worry again. Well, here we are 30 years later. Crimes that were committed before 1990, this bill, SB 94, will let these prisoners be released early if they're over 50 years old and they have been in prison for 20 years, regardless of the crime. So it's the victims, the witnesses to those crimes, the victims of the crime, they lost a loved one to murder, the witnesses to those crimes. Sometimes it's gang members who testified, the state's evidence. Their lives are at risk. The prosecutors who convicted these people, the judges who promised the victim's family, this person will never get out. They are sentenced to life without possibility of parole. If you don't believe in the death penalty, they will never get out. Now they are looking at LWOP as in this bill that will allow LWOP to get out of prison. And it's a violation of every honest dealing that prosecutors, judges were told to the victims. And they're making liars out of the prosecutors and the judges who promised the victims' families they will never get out. You are safe. And this bill is now pending. And I'm going to speak on this on the floor of the assembly when it comes in the next within the next 3 weeks. I will speak on it. It is horrendous. My husband, as I told you, is a career prosecutor. He had about 8 people on death row. These people get out. They were sentenced to death or life without. They're the worst of the worst. Murders, rapes. And so this is what's happening. And this, you talk about my passion. This is what gets my blood to boil. That our criminal justice system, I believe in rehabilitation, but these people, we don't even know. There's not even we don't even know if these people will be rehabilitated. That's another issue. I introduced my first bill last December, AB 15, would allow a Public Record Act request to for someone to make an inquiry about whether this person who's being subject to release early parole, did that person complete the educational programs, the vocational programs, the quality of life improvement type programs? We don't know. When someone's convicted and sent to prison, the arrest, the trial, the sentencing is all public information, but we don't know once they go to prison if they're rehabilitated. So someone got early release out of prison a year and a half ago. They had been in prison for wife abuse, 10-year sentence, wife and spousal abuse, and horrendous other crimes. Gets out at 4 years of a 10-year sentence. And what did they do within 2 weeks? Murdered 6 people here in Sacramento, about 5 blocks away from the state capitol. And so the Sacramento Bee did a PRAR, and it was rejected. So how did this person get out? What were the terms? So no one knows there's no standard for rehabilitation to know if these people have been. We want people to enter our communities if they've been at served time in prison to be rehabilitated, but there's no way to evaluate that. So there's a lot going on in Sacramento. That's why I said I'm glad I'm here, because you know what? This is what I do. I hope to motivate other people to care about what's going on in California. We're all invested in California. So many business owners. I mean, invite me back. I'll talk about climate change. And there's so much of our businesses that are regulated. Our businesses in California are leaving California, many small businesses, who are the supply chain to all the climate change businesses. Because these small businesses can't afford to be in California, the regulations. Now, the one thing I have to talk about real quickly, how are we doing on time? On business.
We're good. We've got about 15 minutes.
Okay. Have you been to Newport Beach? Have you ever been to Newport Beach?
While ago, yeah.
I mean, I'm there often, but.
Okay. Are you familiar with the Balboa Ferry?
Yes, of course.
Okay. The Balboa Ferry.
I grew up in Orange County, so.
Okay. All right. So. It was the Balboa Ferry was founded about in 1919 by the Beek family. The Beek family still owns the Balboa Ferry, makes a crossing 800 feet from Balboa Island to Balboa Peninsula. If you haven't, Phil, if you haven't ridden on the Balboa Ferry, it costs $1.50. to put your car or your bike or your two legs on the Balboa Ferry. There are three ferries that run continuously from 7 a.m.
Like 5 minutes. 11.
Okay, 5 minutes. Let me tell you, if you haven't ridden it, you better hurry. It's the California Air Resources Board is going to shut it down because Mr. Beek has not converted his diesel engine to electric by 2024, January 1, 2025, in a year and a half, he has to convert. Let me just tell you, there's no technology, there's no battery, there's no boat design, ferry boat design. He only has only three of this size. They hold three cars. It's not like in Seattle, it holds 200 cars. Three cars and a handful of bicycles and a handful of pedestrians for $1.50 can ride this low-cost visitor-serving amenity in Newport Beach. But because the California unelected regulators of the California Air Resources Board have mandated by 2035, all trucks, diesel trucks, cars, everything has to be electric, okay? Well, it said to commercial fishermen, you have to be converted to your battery power by 2035. The commercial fishermen, of which there are hundreds in the state, successfully lobbied the CARB, the Air Resources Board, and they got a delay to 2035. Seymour Beek, the owner of the Balboa Island Ferry, said, I'm happy to make the conversion, but I need 10 years. There's no battery. We don't know how big a battery. I can't convert my existing structure. I have to hire a naval architect, a one-off. There's no barge or ferry his size. He has to spend $100,000, which is more than he makes probably in 3 years, because this is kind of just an iconic family-owned little business, to spend $100,000 to hire a naval architect, retired naval architect, to design this and then look for a battery that will fit. So I've said, when Seymour told me this last January, as his assembly person, I said, well, let me look into this. So since then, like 35,000 people have signed a petition to save the Balboa Island Ferry. We got the attention of CARB. I've met with the CARB people, and they're trying to work with Seymour, but Seymour still has to spend $100,000 and create a new boat design before they will even consider giving him an extension. They can't give him an extension until he fills out a stack of forms a foot high and with the boat design and the electrification and all that's involved. This is nonsense. And these people are not even elected, and they are regulators. And I asked the former director, I happened to be at a meeting where he was speaking, the former executive director of CARB several months ago. I said, I asked him the same question. Have you ever ridden the Balboa Island Ferry? No. Well, I said, you better get there quick because you guys are going to make it illegal. And so I had to tell the story, what I just told you. And he said, well, we had 10,000 hearings for small businesses and businesses all sizes. We announced these hearings. I said, well, I never heard of them. And Mr. Beek never heard of them. And he's going to be run out of business by the state of California. So this is still a live issue. I said, you guys are either going to give him an exemption or I'm going to introduce a bill next January to preserve, protect, and keep the Babel Island Ferry as it exists, or give him 10 years. Or we'll look at some other legal names. But it really is the problem of California writ large. The regulators have too much power. They're changing the whole industrial framework of the state to go electric. And big companies can manage that. They have the resources. But the legislators don't really understand business. And they say, well, business makes profits. They can afford it. Well, there's no technology. The diesel people say, there's no technology. Where are we going to plug them in? It's crazy making. And all I want to do, I'll talk about it till the cows come home, because it is nonsense what's happening in California to business, small and large. And little companies like the Balboa Island Ferry is just writ large of the problem of California.
Before I make my next point, and I want to touch upon that whole issue with the electric batteries, I have an issue with your math saying that 1990 was 30 years ago. So I just want to put that out there. It's getting worse. I think the 90s are still 10 years ago, but that's just me.
Oh.
I was a 90s kid, so I hear the 90s, I'm like, I wasn't that long ago. I was like 10, 15 years ago.
The only reason I can keep track of it is my daughter was born in 81 and she's 40. So I know it was 30 years ago.
Well, I was a year old when the Mets last won a World Series. I'm a big Mets fan. So when people ask, how long has it been since the Mets won a World Series? I just tell them my age. So that's how I know. But in terms of the electric battery stuff, real quick about it, I brought this up on the show before. My wife works for a bigger trucking company, and they're under the same issue. And even the big companies aren't really immune to it because the technology is just not there. And that's usually how they legislate, is they'll say, well, if we legislate it, the businesses will follow.
Yes.
Not really. Most of the businesses will just get up and leave and they just won't stay. And I think that's crazy that California, well, I mean, that's just sort of the mindset. If we legislate it, magically this technology will appear. It doesn't exist. We don't have the infrastructure for it. So it's just kind of pie in the sky legislation.
The California Trucking Association, I talked to their government relations person, this was maybe when I was running, so maybe 9-10 months ago. And I said, how are the trucks going to conform to this? What did you say when they told you no way out, you have to do this by 20? And they said, figure it out. Your business, you can make all this money. You can figure it out. I mean, there's no infrastructure. I mean, how do they go from the ports to the Inland Empire to all the warehouses? They're going to have to stop every 30 minutes to recharge and then spend 3 hours recharging. I mean, it's nonsense. But it's a concept. I don't think, let me put it this way. I think I could count on 3 fingers how many people out of 120 members have ever worked in business and have read a profit and loss statement, have read a financial statement, they think profit is bad, and so you should give it away. It's all about redistribution. And you know, I was telling somebody today, I probably wasn't this passionate until I got here and realized, that's what I said to people this past 3 weeks, it's worse than you think, because they don't understand what they're doing. And you know what? Because of term limits, they'll be gone when all this bears fruit or no fruit. They'll be gone in 8 or 10 years. So they don't have to worry about it. They just want California to be the number one in the world for transforming the industrial base of the United States, because California leads everybody and everybody follows. And it's bad for business. It's bad for people. It's bad for the voters. And we need to get people mobilized to stop this madness.
I have 2 comments. My dad has owned a battery business my entire life and before I was born. And he will tell you there is nothing green about battery recycling.
You're absolutely right.
So there's one point. And then this is kind of embarrassing. I read Us Weekly magazine sometimes. And Leonardo DiCaprio is on a yacht every week with a new supermodel.
And his private plane. And
well, that too. But it made me think, how clean energy are yachts? And so I looked it up. And allegedly, they're worse than airplanes. And I don't know, because I don't give into all these. But that's what the claims are, is that they're worse than airplanes. And he's always on a yacht with a new supermodel all the time. And has been my entire life. Like, you know, ever since I knew about Leonardo DiCaprio, he's on yachts.
Yes. And on private airplanes.
Just yachting to preach to us about how we need to save the world and, you know, save energy and whatnot. But he's,
it's just so hypocritical.
Phil, I sent you that article. It was based in Canada, but it was a story of a guy who bought an electric, an EV truck. And then he came on a trip to America and ended up having to just ditch his truck. The charging stations half of them weren't operating. They were super expensive. They took hours. They would only go so much. All these things where he had to keep paying to convert these things. And he ended up like putting so much money into the truck and it was making him go broke. And then the truck would break down. And there was just the whole thing. He said it was a scam. Electric vehicles are just a scam. I wish I had the article for me.
And you know what? There's actually the Wall Street Journal or somebody coined this phrase, that the fear people have, I don't own an electric vehicle, fear people have because they don't know when they're going to be able to recharge. And this has really slowed down the whole marketplace for converting to people driving EV cars. You see a lot of them in California, but the rest, middle America is not driving electric vehicles.
Right. Yes, I was going to say that.
So people aren't in the first trucks.
He lives in She was in Oklahoma, in the middle of nowhere, Oklahoma, though. And she had a story a couple years ago where she broke down. She's a nurse, and she was on her way home from her shift at like 2 a.m. And it was winter, and her car broke down, and she was in the middle of nowhere and had no cell service. And this is, I'm like, this is how all horror stories begin. And, you know, she lived to tell about it, but and where she broke down, it was really dark and like around a corner where if a car did come, they could easily hit her car, all the stuff, but it's winter, it's Oklahoma, it's freezing. And, I could think like some guy in a truck came by, and it's also, okay, so it's also middle of nowhere, Oklahoma, where everyone's friendly, but, he ended up giving her a ride home, and she, again, lived to tell the story. But I was the whole thing. I'm like, no, you could have frozen to death. You could have been hit by a car. You could have been picked up by the wrong person. All the possibilities. Yes. Now, her car broke down. Yeah, as it wasn't an electric vehicle. But what is in that situation with people in electric vehicles breaking down in the middle of nowhere that they can't charge?
That's the reality. And the trucks especially, because it takes hours to recharge. The technology doesn't exist. My philosophy or my position on all of this transformation is let the marketplace decide. There wasn't a regulation that mandated that everybody buy a gasoline powered automobile and get rid of horses. I mean, it evolves. And it will evolve faster because technology does that. And that's what the marketplace does. Why it has to be mandated, prove that it can work. And it is creating new technologies and new kinds of businesses. Great, but it's not enough to power the tens of millions of cars that need to be powered. And the grid that's a whole other story. The grid, the electric grid, is not powerful enough to sustain all these things, from water heaters to cars to trucks to everything that's going to be electric. It's just craziness. And, you know, I heard a good presentation recently. It might be something you get somebody to speak on. Hydrogen is really not talked about. And hydrogen powered it's a product, I guess, of natural gas. But that's a whole other thing, the oil industry. I mean, every industry is being adversely affected in California. Hydrogen is a source of power that could be a competitive alternative to electric power. Let me just say a few words about the industry. And I'm not an advocate for the oil industry, but it's just foolish, because I did sponsor a bill. Oh, this is kind of an important point I'm going to make. I did one of my second bill was to allow authorize the governor to defer the automatic gas tax increase, which occurs every July 1st. And I thought, who is going to oppose this? This is when I was really naive last December on my first day when I introduced two bills, when we were all sworn in. Who's going to oppose this? This will help lower income people who can't afford the $7-$6 a gallon gas. This will give them relief from the automatic increase of the state taxes that are just mounting. I couldn't get any support for this. It didn't even get assigned to a committee. And I go, who's not supportive of this? Then I found out the dirty little secret in California transportation committee circles and advocates. This was quoted to me, but I'll just repeat it, that legislators, California Democrats, do not want to make anything easy for California drivers. They don't want it to be inexpensive. They don't want the roads to get repaired. No more freeways will be built. And the reason is you cannot change behavior and change people's behaviors so they go to electric vehicles or public transportation. You cannot change behavior unless you make driving miserable for California drivers. That's the goal. And so they're going to keep gas prices high. So on with the controls on the special session, extraordinary session that the governor had to put a control board regulator over the oil companies, just so you know, because the state of California has not issued additional permits, refining permits for the permit holders who want to drill new oil wells, not necessarily in the ocean, but just wherever in California, they've been denied permits for 2 years. So California is importing, maybe others have told you this, importing what it can't refine or drill out of or bring out of the ground in California. We're importing it from Venezuela. And the cost mm-hmm. of shipping it from Venezuela and their human rights issues, their lack of environmental control issues, and that oil is dirty oil coming to California, it has to be refined in expensive California, because we refine, the state requires a higher grade of refined gasoline. This is nonsense. It's not even logical. It's not even logical. But the point is, make people miserable. So you have what? Construction workers riding a bus to their construction site, carrying their bag of tools. There will not be any more freeways built. Make people miserable, but have them sit in traffic. That's true.
Well, we're seeing it down here in San Diego. They are continually try again to do the tax per mile. And their whole goal is, we want to tax people out of their cars and into public transportation. When only 3% of San Diego County uses public transportation, and San Diego County is a big county, it's widespread, so it's very hard to do any public transportation. But in terms of energy itself, I can never take anybody seriously who says we need to transition to electric cars. If you are not willing to agree, that's fine. Let's open up 3-4 more nuclear power plants. If you say no to that, I can't take you seriously that you really want electric cars, because nuclear has been proven to be
the best.
It's the most efficient carbon neutral or carbon zero source out there, much better than many of the other things. And in terms of the oil, I think it's a great point. No, people really don't talk about this. California could be a energy exporter for the whole West Coast, in terms of, we could produce our own oil. We could make sure it's clean. We can make sure the workers do it under humane conditions and they get paid a good wage. We can make sure we can control everything from the oil.
Yes.
And then have enough of it to not only supply California, but probably other states as well. So it's crazy that we do that.
Do you know that the oil workers are typically high school graduates, and they are making high middle income jobs or wages, because they are highly skilled and have longevity, and they are the backbone. There are hundreds of thousands of oil workers whose jobs are going to be eliminated. These are people who can buy homes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just craziness that we're depriving an industry that incidentally has enforced every regulatory clean oil refining process. It's cleaner than any oil produced anywhere in the world in California, because it's the most expensive and the best paying jobs, hardworking jobs, well-paid jobs. And we're trying to shut them down. There's one real quick story. So on the governor's special session, when they were passing this oil company control board, there was one Democrat, who voted against it. And she represents a section of Bakersfield. And they excoriated her on social media. And she was confident she was doing the right thing. She was representing her district. And the governor's secretary put on Twitter at the time, "You are alone. No one's going to stand with you." And she posted, she's Asian Indian. She posted on her Twitter page a picture of her extended family, like 40 members of her family. And she said, "I am not alone." And these people are so misguided that's why I hope you, through the growing popularity of your wonderful program, Underground Studio, I love it, you continue to grow, because people need to hear these stories and how crazy it is, and they can stop it. They by voting for Republicans, and get good Republicans to run for office and help support good Republicans to run for office.
Well, I think that's a perfect place to kind of wrap it up. We're coming up on the hour. This has been a great talk. I feel like we probably could have talked for like 2 or 3 hours. So with that said, whenever you want to come back on, open door, open invitation, please feel free to reach out and let us know. Whenever you have something coming up. Yeah. Let us know. And we'll be happy to have you back on. So
well, keep doing the great work you're doing. And I will become a regular listener now. I'll make sure I clip that app and follow you and podcast you and all that need to do. Keep doing. It's people like you that are going to make the difference. Spread the word. So thank you.
Well, we appreciate that. So where can people find you and follow you if they want to learn more about what you're doing? Because you're doing a lot up there. So
it's real simple. Google Diane Dixon Assembly and I pop right up. So that's probably the easiest thing. I do have Diane Dixon at asm.ca.gov. I think that's it, Diane B. Dixon. But just dial Diane, or just type in Google Diane Dixon Assembly, 72 is my district, and you'll come right to me and you'll get all my contact information.
Great.
And Instagram, Diane Dixon, you'll find me there too.
Great. Well, thank you again for coming on. And to everyone, as I always end every show, if you enjoyed this show, make sure you share it with somebody. That's the best way to support this show. And this is a free way to support this show, is to just share it with somebody who you think would find this helpful. Make sure you like, share, subscribe, leave a review, comment. All of that stuff helps the algorithm, helps people find us. And with that, have a good night, everybody.
And good night. Thank you so much. I enjoyed it. Take care.
Thank you, Diane.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of California Underground. If you like what you heard, remember to subscribe, like, and review it, and follow California Underground on social media for updates as to when new episodes are available.